This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This week, Super Tuesday came and went, and Mitt Romney moved on several steps closer to the GOP presidential nomination and vowed to soldier on.
Tomorrow we wake up and we start again. And the next day, we'll do the same.
Meanwhile, the cultural wars turned particularly ugly this week thanks to Rush Limbaugh, who calls a Georgetown law student who suggested that health insurance should cover contraception a slut and a prostitute.
And I again sincerely apologize to Ms. Fluke for using those two words to describe her.
But is the apology really sincere, and does it go far enough?
Also this week, the Mattapan murder trial nears its end with testimony from the lone survivor, now paralyzed from a gunshot wound to the head.
If you're in the streets, regardless of what happens to you, you're supposed to take it.
And a Massachusetts man is ordered to pay child support for children conceived through in vitro fertilization after the couple split.
So those are among some of the top stories from this week's news that we're going to talk about with two members of our Week in Review team, Jeff Jacoby, columnist for the Boston Globe. Welcome back, Jeff.
Hello, Anthony.
Hello to you. And E.J. Graff, resident scholar at the Brandeis Women's Studies Research Center and a columnist and contributing editor at the American Prospect. E.J., welcome back to you. Great to have you.
Pleasure to be here.
So let's start with the big political story of the week, Super Tuesday. Mitt Romney won 6 out of 10 states, including the night's biggest prize, Ohio, by a hair. He picked up the lion's share of the delegates, took several steps toward clinching the GOP's nomination, but he failed to knock out Rick Santorum, the former Pennsylvania senator, who also won several states, and so the Republican primary race slogs on. Here's Mitt Romney Tuesday night.
And so we'll go day by day, step by step, door by door, heart to heart. There'll be good days, there'll be bad days. Always long hours, never enough time to get everything done. But on November 6th, we're going to stand united, not only having won an election, but having saved a future.
That's Mitt Romney on Tuesday night.
Well, so he's the quicker picker-upper, isn't he?
Quicker picker-upper. Well, Jeff, let me start with you. What's the takeaway from Tuesday?
I think the takeaway is that not a whole lot has changed. It was something of a muddle going in, and it's something of a muddle coming out. None of the candidates suffered anything disastrous. None of the candidates won any huge victory that they weren't anticipating. Had that happened, had, for example, Romney won Ohio in a blowout, mm-hmm. that would have been something. Had he won Tennessee, which was, a southern state where he hasn't done very well yet, that would have been something.
But isn't part of the narrative, he is going there step by step, it's hard to imagine who else is going to
get
there.
I have thought all along, I think I've said in front of this microphone before, that I think it's Mitt Romney's to lose, and it's this, 10 yards in a cloud of dust kind of thing, bit by bit by bit. I actually think that the more interesting piece of this puzzle coming out of Super Tuesday is Newt Gingrich. Hmm. He did win Georgia, his home state, which he was totally expected to win. Coming up this Tuesday is, I think, Alabama and Mississippi. I think if he doesn't win both of those, he's got to drop out of the race.
EJ, what's your takeaway from Tuesday night?
Well, I think the Republicans are working to really, really hard to reelect Obama. I mean, they're leaving everybody in
like
this
that.
Primary standing to keep knocking each other out. I think they could choose as their theme song. I still haven't found what I'm looking for. Romney reminds me of Al Gore.
It's so interesting you say that, because I've had the same thought. Because he doesn't have that sort of passion to...
Because he's a second-generation politician trying to finish what his father started and looks stiff. He doesn't have that charisma and that feeling that, I really want this. I really love being here with you. Just trying to do the right thing and say what he's told until he gets it.
Even as when opposed you're in to George W. Bush, for instance, who's also the second generation,
true.
Also trying to
very
do
good.
It. But he had that connection with, maybe not with his opponents, but with a lot of people, he really managed to connect.
Yeah. He had the feeling there was a real person, no matter what he was
interestingly,
doing.
I was looking at a news story from March 1980. So that's, the year that we all know it in November, Ronald Reagan defeated Jimmy Carter. But in March 1980, the headlines were that the leader in the polls was Gerald Ford, who wasn't even an announced candidate. He had been defeated by Carter 4 years earlier, although the conventional wisdom was that Reagan was moving toward the nomination. The conventional wisdom was also that he probably wasn't electable in November. There's a certain element of who the hell knows It's, you know, we all of us who are in the pundit business should probably take it a little bit with a grain of salt. But I have to say, in my kish, because I feel it the way you do, which is the more this goes on with the Republicans, the happier Mitt Romney, Barack Obama wakes up every morning.
Yeah, idea of circular firing squad comes to mind. Well, this week, Barbara Bush, wife of former President George H.W. Bush, called this race a particularly ugly one. Let's listen to what she said.
But it's been, I think, the worst campaign I've ever seen in my life. I just hate it. I hate the fact that people think compromise is a dirty word.
Now, Barbara Bush and George H.W. Bush, the former president, have expressed support for Mitt Romney, but is she right? And how is this long race setting Romney up for the fall against President Obama? EJ, you've suggested that this whole process is working pretty well in President Obama's favor.
Well, I think Citizens United is backfiring a little bit on the Republicans, at least for this part of the campaign. I mean, the
Supreme Court case that unleashed all of this money that's going to the super PACs,
which continues to prop up the challenger candidates, even though I think everybody knows it's going to end up being Romney. I mean, we could all be completely shocked and wake up one morning at Santorum. But, oh, that would be a bad morning. It'll obviously come in on his favor in the later part of the campaign, being able to tap large amounts of money, or not tap it, but have it come to his aid. But until then, he can be beaten up the way Newt Gingrich beat him up in that ad about his that online documentary about Bain Capital.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
That was just so vicious. That's not going to go away.
Well, let's move on. We've got some other stories that we need to cover. And let's move on to Rush Limbaugh. He apologized this week to Sandra Fluck. She's the Georgetown law student who had been prevented from testifying in front of Congress about the cost of birth control during the debate over insurance coverage and contraception. She later posted a video online.
Contraceptive can cost a woman over $3,000 during law school. For a lot of students who, like me, are on public interest scholarships, that's practically an entire summer's salary.
So as we know, Rush Limbaugh called Sandra Fluck a slut and a prostitute for daring to suggest that private health insurance cover contraceptives. Hard to make sense of his position in this day and age. He later apologized for those remarks. Some of you, Jeff, you included, said his apology didn't go far enough.
It certainly didn't convince me, and I wrote a column saying so. And, you know, as you know, saying it from the right. And on most things, many things, I agree with Rush Limbaugh's, the public policy aspect. And I can appreciate his sense of humor. I understand a lot of what he does is meant for entertainment and that he's got an over-the-top style. And I've written in the past saying that I think much of what he does, has value. But this is one where I think he let down his own side and he let down his own followers.
Because of his attack?
This was not a case of an entertainer or a broadcaster or a talk show host caught up in the heat of the moment, blurting something out that he later regretted. This was a sustained rant against this woman, 3 days running. I agree with him on the policy. I mean, we're not going to litigate the whole contraception thing here, but I agree with him on the policy. But she wasn't saying anything that isn't mainstream position on the left among Democratic activists. If Nancy Pelosi had said it, Rush Limbaugh would never have spoken that way about her for 3 days running. And it wasn't just using the word slut and using the word prostitute. It was calling her round-heeled and saying that she should post her sex videos online and doing it day after day after day. And then finally came an apology, or wasn't even labeled an apology. It was labeled a statement on his website, which went on for 12 sentences. And not until the 12th sentence did he manage to actually work an apology in there. The whole thing just struck me as so insincere. And I fault him, somebody who, most of the time I think has a better ear for this kind of thing, for keeping a story alive that makes him look bad and weakens the political argument that he was trying to make.
EJ Graff, what was your response to this apology, or this alleged apology, this so-called apology?
Well, I'm delighted to be able to agree with Jeff that on all the things you've said so far. I think the things that I would add. I had such a hard time understanding the line of thinking behind the rant. It really took me a while before I understood what he was saying. I mean, I think of contraception as basically a public health and an economics issue. I mean, women who have some control over their fertility have a much better chance at earning a living. Period. The pregnancy is often troubling to women's health, so it saves the insurers money, right? If they're covering contraception, they are much less likely to be covering pregnancy costs, which are higher, or abortion costs, which are also higher than what the contraception is. There's a new study that just came out this week that shows that young women who had access to the pill in the 1970s out-earned the women who did not have access to contraception by about 8% at age 50.
Right.
So that tells you that women who can plan their lives, go to college, get some work experience, are contributing to American prosperity in a much bigger way.
I guess my first reaction to this story was, what's new about this? I mean, Rush Limbaugh is an entertainer who attracts listeners often by being sort of outrageous, but with advertisers pulling out, did he go too far even for this brand of entertainment, Jeff?
Well, clearly for those advertisers, he went too far. You know, when you say what's new about it, I'll tell you, I used to write a column, an annual column, and I did it for about a dozen years about hate speech from the left. Mm-hmm. And the whole point of those columns was to say, at least once a year, there is all of this outrageous stuff that gets said, slander and demeaning and demonizing by liberals of conservatives in a way that would never be tolerated if mainstream conservatives were saying this about liberals. And eventually I stopped because what I noticed was that the national discourse was getting increasingly coarse on the right as well. And so, you know, with all respect, EJ, I don't think that the issue is so much the merits of the particular, you know, the contraception mandate. Obviously an interesting issue that a lot of people have had a lot of things to talk about and to write about. But on this particular matter, what concerns me is just, as somebody who, like the rest of us, is in the media, contributes to the public discourse, I don't want to feel as though you have to take a shower every time you listen to people talk about something controversial, and it's gotten that way.
It was disgusting, and it took me a while to understand.
It happens a lot on the left as well, and the left should police the wrongdoers on its side.
But here's what made the difference, I think. One is that for the past 2 months, women have just been out of their minds about the attack on contraception. I think it is related to the policy issue for this reason. And there was a huge mobilization on Twitter, especially, but among all the wired young feminists who just were not going to sit back for this one. This was sort of the push too far, because it did link the Santorum position to hatred of women's independent sexuality. And it sort of suggested that there's an attempt here at a counter-reformation, that there's the gains that women made in the 1970s over economic autonomy and bodily autonomy, you get to decide what you do with your life, are being attacked. And I think that's why it got this level of outrage.
Well, let's move on to one more story, very different kind of story that involves reproductive issues and rights. This one about a court ruling in Massachusetts. Chuck Wadera and Blessing Akolai separated after 9 years of marriage. They'd been on a waiting list for donated eggs, hoping to conceive a child using in vitro fertilization. After they separated, the eggs became available, and the wife asked the husband for consent to pursue in vitro fertilization, which he gave, but only if she agreed that he wouldn't be responsible for the child. The wife, Blessing, had the twins using the donated sperm and eggs. So this week, a court rules that their agreement was invalid, and that, in fact, the husband is legally responsible for the children and has to pay child support. Clearly an unusual case, EJ. Did the court make the right decision here?
Well, it made the right decision under the law. I mean, this is very, very settled law that the husband is the father, period. He could have been on another continent for the entire year that she got pregnant and had the child.
Even
he
with
is
donated
the father.
Egg and sperm.
Well, that's what makes it tricky. Yeah. And this goes back to that truism that bad cases make bad law. The genetic material is not related to either of them. Nevertheless, he was the husband. When the child was conceived, he gave permission for her to go forward, and she wouldn't have been able to do it without his permission.
He is responsible. That's a detail I didn't quite get. Why did she need? They were already separated. Why did she need his consent in order to go forward with?
Precisely for this reason, because legally, they're still married, so he would therefore be responsible.
I see.
So
it's a really unusual.
But if she were divorced, if a divorce had been finalized, she would have been able to go ahead and she wouldn't be. You don't think she'd been able to what?
You know, I don't know. I don't know the case law on that. But as long as they were married,
But this was because precisely because they were married
they
that
were married.
He remains
right.
the paternally
married,
responsible.
But separated.
But yeah. still, yeah. Legally, they were married. I mean, you can say that the law is wrong, but the idea of the law historically is that some man has to be responsible for every child, or if you're going to update it, that two parents have to be responsible for a child.
And in Massachusetts, that,
and
there have been
I'm
even more.
I'm just going to finish. Yeah. And the public policy goal is, you can look at it either way. You can say it's for the welfare of the child, for the well-being of the child, you need two sources of support if you can find them, or for to keep a child off the public dole. He's responsible.
Fascinating story.
But if that's the case, if that really is public policy, that there must always be two sources of support for a child,
if you can find it,
then shouldn't it be unlawful in Massachusetts for single women to undergo artificial insemination?
Well, it's different there. No, not it's not public policy there. There need to be, but if you have two sources of support who can be identified, they are both there.
Yes.
And the husband is the father. Period.
It's a fascinating story. We've got to wrap it up there because we want to leave time for our hubbub, that story that didn't make it above the fold this week. Meghna, let me ask you for your hubbub.
Okay, so my hubbub is I want to know what's going on in the state of Rhode Island.
Doesn't everybody.
Many things.
Because in just the past week, not one, but two Powerball winners coming out of Rhode Island. The first is, of course, the wonderful story of 81-year-old Louise White, who wins something like $300 million.
Sherbert, that's the key.
Rainbow Sherbert is the key, exactly. But she seems to be a very smart lady because she's, you know, putting it all in a trust, getting financial advice, taking care of it. And then we find out on Thursday, just yesterday, another Powerball winner in Rhode Island. If there's a statistician out there who can answer this question, I want to know, what's the probability of two Powerball tickets coming from the same state?
From the smallest state in the union,
exactly,
no less.
With
within
the longest
days
name.
Of each other.
I'm moving there.
And why
tomorrow.
Am I not buying my tickets from Rhode Island?
Yeah, exactly.
That's a good idea. Thank you for that, Meghna. E.J. Graff, your...
Oh, mine is in a court in Worcester. Police officer jostled an evidence bag and the bullet in the bag went off.
Oh my God.
And I think they all hit the ground or something like that. People thought that there was a witness shooting or some kind of dispute that had come into
the court. So there was a single cartridge bullet?
Two bullets in the evidence bag and it went off. And it's funny because nobody got hurt. But how scary is that?
How scary is that? Jeff Jacoby.
Well, I'm returning to the reproductive theme of much of our segment today. It was reported this week that the U.S. birth rate, the fertility rate, has hit its lowest, has dropped to a new low. It's down to 1.9%, which is well below replacement level. And apparently, at least the story that I came across in Time magazine, the experts all seem to think that this is related to the economy. So for all these people who have been, you know, going on a hullabaloo about Obamacare and contraception, now, you know, I guess there's a new line. You can talk about the Obama economy and the effect that it's having on American fertility. But fewer Americans being born, and what that means, I'm not sure, but...
Two words, more immigration.
At least the four of us are still here to talk about it.
All right, well, here's my hubbub. It's not exactly a hubbub because the Globe did editorialize about this gentleman, but it warmed my heart. I was a kid in the 60s. I grew up watching Rex Traylor on Boomtown on WBZ-TV. Is this a name that means anything to you? He was a cowboy who did a live show for kids right here in Boston. Our state
A Boston cowboy.
Well, he's actually Texas raised, but he did rope tricks and gun tricks, and he had a horse named Gold Rush, and he had a live audience of kids.
Ooh, that's a good name for a horse.
He was thrilling. Rex Traylor is still alive. He lives in Massachusetts, and our great state legislature has proposed a law that would recognize him as the Bay State's official cowboy.
A TV cowboy from Massachusetts.
And here's the kicker. He's going to be in this studio in about an hour, and I'm going to interview him.
Oh, this is Anthony's big day.
That's my big
day. Can you sing the theme song?
I could, but I just don't want to go there right now. But thank you. So
he's
listen.
He's actually twirling a lasso over his head, though.
Jeff Jacoby, columnist at the Boston Globe, thanks so much for coming in.
Always a pleasure. Thank you.
E.J. Graff, resident scholar at the Brandeis Women's Studies Research Center. She also contributes to the American Prospect. Thank you, E.J. Graff.
A pleasure to be here.
Well, stick with us, because up next, the Massachusetts connection to the mystery of Ireland's Great Blasket Island. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.